This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This is DSC's Untamed Heritage. DSC's Untamed Heritage is brought to you by Dallas Safari Club.
Conservation, education, protecting hunters' rights.
Ruger.
Rugged, reliable firearms.
Hardity.
Accurate, deadly, dependable.
Trigicon.
Brilliant aiming solutions.
Burnham Brothers Calls.
Calling us calls made.
Texas Wildlife Association.
Working for tomorrow's wildlife today.
Texas Raised Hunting Products.
The Scent Gods.
www.trailingthehuntersmoon.com.
The Hunter Conservation website.
We're now into about a month or so of kind of self-confinement because of the coronavirus thing, and hopefully we're kind of on the backside of it now. It's not going to be that much longer before it gets a little warmer, and particularly some of the northern climes where they're having more problems than we are at the time down here in the south. But, you know, the best thing we can do is just kind of stay in and say a few prayers and do our best to try to avoid people as much as we possibly can, try to stop this thing get ready for the fall. You know, there's this great time right now to just kind of sit back and relax. And I know there's some difficult times going on, but, you know, at the same time, you can also take a little bit of time off and kind of reflect on a lot of different things. And really, we're still so very, very fortunate. We've got a roof over our head. We've got water. We've got electricity. We've got a president that cares about the people all those kind of good things are going on. So, you know, be thankful for those and look for some of the positive things. Kind of, you know, this time of the year, we're talking about springtime. We're in April, May right now, and about to be in May. And that's usually a good time when things started. Used to be the fact that you could go bear hunting. Now, if you're like me, I really enjoy bear hunting. To me, it's one of those things. I remember years and years ago growing up out in the country in a little community called Zimmerjait, where most people spoke German and Low German. And, you know, English was kind of the second or third language kind of thing. But I remember sitting this time of the year and on the front porch. It's starting to kind of warm up during the daytime, and mosquitoes hadn't gotten bad at night. So you could sit out on the porch somewhere. And I used to remember sitting on the porch there at my granddad's place overlooking a little creek called Cummins Creek. Old Indian village happened to be right there on top of everything and where their house was. Cause I remember digging around in the backyard and finding arrowheads. And so that wasn't one of those places that nobody had ever been before. There had been an Indian village there at one time or another. And I listened to the stories being told by some of the old timers, and the old timers were, you know, from the middle 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s when I was a little kid, that were in their 70s and 80s, and they'd sit around and tell stories at night. And some of those stories involve some of the early days there, of course, dealing with hunting and fishing. They loved to fish. They loved to hunt. Both those things are very important as far as food was concerned. And we weren't too far from the Colorado River. Now, down on the Colorado River, there used to be a lot of river cane, tall cane, kind of like they see down the Rio Grande and a few other places. And those river cane thickets were supposedly the haunts of a tremendous number of black bear at one time. And I remember sitting around listening to stories being told about chasing black bear with hounds and dogs. And, you know, they depended upon the meat and they depended upon the hides to some extent. Excuse me. And also they used the tallow or the lard, if you will, to make lard. And they cooked with it, bear grease kind of thing. So black bear, when it comes right down to it, in terms of my family, even though we're basically from Texas from about the 1830s or something like that, where they were somewhat dependent on those black bear during springtime and the wintertime particularly. And during springtime, they hunted them a little bit as well, too. And I'm sure they hunted them year-round, but I guess part of that came down to the fact that, you know, I come by some of this bear hunting in a kind of an honest way because my folks from years ago loved to hunt bear as well, too. My dad loved running hounds, so kind of grew up with him doing that and kind of came down to the fact that I really wanted to shoot a black bear. And I'd already graduated from Texas A&M, and I was working wildlife in Parks and Wildlife Department as a wildlife biologist, and several friends had black bear. And my dad, and one of my dad's first cousins, Crockett Leindecker, both ran hounds, and they loved the hounds. They loved listening to them. They loved following them. And we kind of started working on a plan to go bear hunting. Now, back then, you could buy a whole lot of bear scent. And what my dad and Crockett would do is they'd go out and live trap coons and douse those coons in bear scent and turn them loose and let those coons create a trail, if you will, that smell like bear scent. And then they'd wait a little while and turn the dogs loose and the dogs would chase them and put them up a tree. And they'd go up with the capture equipment that they had, kind of a long, had a noose on the end of a long stick, and they'd recapture those coons up in those trees and bring them back down again. And over a while, you know, put them back in a cage, give them plenty to eat, and turn them back loose again, and maybe even douse them with bear scent a second time. And, you know, they loved running coons as well, too, but they, in the process, they were teaching their dogs how to run bear. And we found a place in New Mexico. I'd been doing a bunch of things with New Mexico game wardens, particularly with Ron Porter and a few other guys that were at that time in a position of where they knew a lot of folks in New Mexico, and got us an invite to go out there on John Batchelor's place, which is out of Ruidoso, and it kind of jutted up against the Mescalero Apache. And he was having problems with bears coming in and digging up water lines and chewing up plastic water lines. So we got an opportunity to run bear there. And what we'd do is we'd go out and hunt the water holes first thing in the morning, look for tracks and turn them loose and turn the dogs loose. And we found a good track. And so it worked out, and Crockett shot a bear that way that the dogs put up a tree, or actually he shot it right before it got to the tree. And we, in the afternoons, we'd hunt around water holes. Now, and this was during kind of in the late summer, early fall, so I'm thinking of it had to have been about, they had back spring bear hunts back then, but also had fall bear hunts. And so we hunted during a situation to where those bear would come to water. And those bear would come to water, you'd find an old remote water hole somewhere, and all you'd have to really do is kind of set up and sit there and wait, kind of like you would sitting over a food plot. And over the years, I ended up not only taking my first bear that way, there, right next, pretty close to where the Mescalero Apache was, an absolutely gorgeous, kind of a dark cinnamon chocolate kind of bear that kind of really kind of set the stage. And my dad, unfortunately, did not get a bear that time, but we did that two or three different times. And Oh my gosh, I'll tell you what, it was just an absolutely fantastic way to hunt bear. And kind of really grew to where I loved bear hunting. And then I got an opportunity to really hunt spring bear a few times and shot some bear and got to hunt a little bit up north and shot a bear up in Saskatchewan years ago on a whitetail deer hunt. And they were doing a drive for us and where they hunted in that area for whitetail deer. And this black bear came out in front of us and another gentleman that was with us also shot a real nice black bear. These were about a 225-pound bear, just, you know, really nice kind of bear, but not that monster bear that everybody dreams about, or that if you're into bear hunting and you're looking for, you know, you think at least you want a big one. I knew that the younger ones were really good to eat because we tried the meat off of those, and I mean, good gosh, they were good to eat, so... Got to where I was hunting for the hides, and I got to where I was hunting for the pure joy of hunting bear, of spending a lot of time out, and then finally decided I'd really like to try to take a big one. Well, as it worked out, during that time frame, toward the, back in the 80s or something like that, I was doing a lot of work, early 90s, I was doing a lot of work for the Thompson Center Arms people, and we developed the Thompson Center Encore. I was the first guy to shoot anything with an Encore, just happened to be a pistol, and we'll talk about that sometime. But shot a really nice moose up in Maine, and a few years later, we developed the 209x50 muzzleloader. I was shooting primarily Hornady muzzleloader bullets, and found out that they were super accurate and shot several animals with it, you know, later on. But that first go-around, guy that was the marketing manager of Thompson Center and I, we were kind of in a race to see who was going to be able to take the first animal. And it just happened bear season was going on, spring bear season. Well, I'd been doing a bunch of stuff and hunted somewhat with the family out of New Mexico, and they also hunted for elk and deer and black bear in New Mexico and up in Colorado primarily, and they started doing some work on the White Mountain Apache Reservation. So I knew that there were some big black bear there. It's like there's some huge bear scattered around, particularly on the edges of the bear range, if you will, where the temperatures are such that those bears never really have to go into hibernation for any length of time. They'll lay down to sleep for a while and it's cold, and then they'll get up and forage again. And, you know, neat parts of North Carolina where they shoot some really big bear that way. And this happened to be this down on the White Mountain Apache Reservation. And that area really known for huge elk, and they realized the fact that black bear do take a lot of elk calves, and they were trying to increase the elk population there on the reservation. So they hired Dick and Sam Ray and to do some hunting and try to thin those bears down a little bit. And so I talked to both, particularly talked to Dick about it, because then I'd gotten to be friends, and his son Mike. And I said, look, I said, if y'all ever get in a situation where there's some really big bear or there's some odd colored bear, I said, I've taken several black bear. They're just absolutely beautiful. Taking one or two that were kind of dark chocolate brown. But I said, I really would like to shoot a really big odd colored bear. So they went down and started checking out their reservation and got a call one day, and it was Dick. And Larry said, we found a bear. He said, that bear is almost like the color of a polar bear. He says, it's almost totally white. And he's about a 300-pound bear. And we think we got an idea where he's living. He said, if you can get down here in the next couple of days or within the week, he said, you know, maybe we can get you on that bear. Maybe we can put him up a tree, or, you know, we'll hunt water holes in the evening, and we'll get out and hunt the dogs in the morning. So I made quick arrangements at the time that I could do so. Flew out to Sholo, Arizona, and got out there, and Dick picked me up at the airport. And as we're driving out to where we're going to hunt that first afternoon, I got in there about mid-morning, and he goes, Larry, he said, we had a bear show up. He said, "No, he's not white." He said, "This bear is just as black as he can be." He said, "But this bear is absolutely huge." He said, I no doubt this bear is way over 500 pounds, and he's really big in other ways too. He's got a big head. He's got a good hair coat. And he said, "The reason I know this," he said, "right after I called you," he said, "this bear showed up." He said, "We took a bow hunter out." He said, "Literally, this bear ran us out of the woods." He says, "This bear is extremely aggressive. He has no fear of humans." And he said, "Unfortunately, all we had was a bow." And he said, "My bow hunter got spooked." And he said, "Next thing you know," he said, we're backing up and we're running out of there." And he said, "You know, usually," he said, we carry a firearm just in case." But he said, "You know, in this instance, we're just really just kind of looking to begin with." And he said, "Set up on this bear." And he said, "The bear was it pretty smart for the most part." And he said, "If you see this bear," he said, "I got a feeling you might shoot this one." And I said, "You know, I'd hunted Canada and I hunted several other places. I said, you know, I said, I've killed some bear that were probably a little over 300 pounds. And I said, I really would like a big bear." And I said, "You know, kill a lot of them that were solid black." And he goes, "I'm just telling you, you might consider this bear if you happen to see it." So get in there his brother Sam was in camp and we got to visit a little bit. And Sam says, "Larry," he said, "shoot that muzzle loader, make sure it's shooting." So I did, and loaded up 100 grains of Pyrodex and put a Hornady bullet, 250 grain bullet in front of it, Sabo bullet, shot it at 35 yards, I think is what it shot. He said, "Cause that's about going to be the very longest shot that you're going to take." It was hitting on a water hole. He said, "Most time going to be closer than that if we're going to get one up in a tree." He said, "It'll be at least closer than that as well too." So, we shot, and it shot absolutely perfectly, swallowed the barrel, got a bite to eat. And he said, about 2:30 or so, he said, "I want to go sit on this water, close to this water hole. There are two tree trails that converge right in front of this area." He said, "By then I'd hunted up north and I'd seen traditional bear trails that some of the big bear up there make, where they step in basically the same place every time that they step down. It's almost like going from spot to spot to spot to where it's almost like a marked trail. Well, these two trails came together right in front of this series of little oak bushes and then went down to this little remote water hole. So we set up, and I had actually taken two muzzleloaders. I had one of the older traditional type muzzleloaders with me as well, beyond the Encore, which was at that time brand new. And I had it loaded up kind of as a second gun, just in case I might need a second quick shot. So we go to this spot, and it's kind of a little place that you can sit down kind of against a little oak tree, and there's oak brushed around, and I notice there's a little shooting lane over to my right, the extreme right, and the wind's kind of blowing from our left to that area to our right. And we get there about 2:45 or something like that, and just barely get settled in. I got a set of shooting sticks, and I got it propped up, so they got the gun propped up, kind of shooting in the direction of where we think this bear may come from, and get all set up. We're not there, as I said, 15 minutes. The wind's blowing about five to 8 miles an hour, probably kind of quartering from the front left to blowing to our back right, and we're sitting there, and here's something behind us a little bit, and I'm kind of listening, and you see hear this very soft kind of on the leaves, almost just barely could hear it. And sitting there, and I kind of glance over to the right, and not just right there. I mean, probably less than 10, 15 steps away, I can see a dark spot. And it looks huge. And so I shoot both left or right handed, something I taught myself many years ago. And so I maneuvered the muzzleloader around, so that I've got my shooting stick stuck up, set up to where I can shoot down this little lane that's right there. It's not a real wide one. It's not very long distance. and look and look, and then I can see it is a bear, and it is a huge black bear. And then I threw the leaves and through the underbrush, I can tell this thing's got a huge head. His ears are hanging kind of on the side of his head, and got a big old divot that runs down the center of his skull, showing he's got big old huge muscles. And I think, man, you know, this is a big black bear. It's a lot bigger than any of them I've ever shot before. And I kind of cocked the hammer and just kind of wait, kind of pointing that gun over to the extreme right. And this animal, now I know he can smell us. There's no question this bear is catching our full scent. And I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to Sam, but I'm paying attention to this bear. And about that time, that bear comes to where that opening is, that little shooting lane that I can see down. And like I said, it's just right there in front of me, this little shooting lane. And as that bear comes around into that shooting lane, he immediately turns, looks right at me. Now, the bear is only about, less than 10 yards away, looks down that alleyway, pops his teeth. I cock the hammer, and here this bear comes. I mean, he's charging full onslaught charge coming from 10 yards away. Thank God I had the muzzleloader cocked with the encore action, and the more shot, you know, right beside the scope than I did through the scope. And this bear is coming, and at about, oh my gosh, maybe 10, 12 feet, something like that at the very most, I pull the trigger. I pull the trigger, and the bear just, I mean, he was coming. There was no question. He was coming like, he's talking about coming like a freight train. And I shot, and trying to hit him in the chest, and it was so close, of course, there was smoke everywhere, and the bear just kind of stopped, and I'm reaching down to grab this other muzzleloader, and the bear kind of wobbles a little bit, and then turns around, and thankfully runs the other way, and I'm grabbing this muzzleloader just in case I've got it, and as I do, I kind of glance over to my right, and there's Sam Ray with a 44 mag stuck right about next to my ear, pointing where this bear was coming to. And he goes, that SOB wasn't going to come any closer. And he says, "I God, you shot." So we sat there for just a little bit trying to listen and see if we could hear this bear running. And you could hear him running for just a little bit, and then everything stopped. And I reloaded the muzzleloader, put that 250 grain. It was actually a pistol bullet when you got right down to it that they developed that I'd shot by Hornady, and got it all reloaded, and we waited wait a little bit and listened, and there was a blood trail from the time that we started right there 10, 12 feet away. There was actually blood right there where I shot him and followed this very heavy blood trail for about 75 yards and found this bear, and he's absolutely huge. I mean, this bear is a monster bear. You really didn't give me a whole lot of choice whether I shot him or not. There was not a whole lot of time there to make a decision to shoot or not shoot. And with the close proximity to that bear and the size and having heard the stories, this bear was very, very aggressive. I shot, and I'm glad I did in many ways. Not only the fact that he might have come in there and no telling what he'd have done to us, but the fact that and when we got up there and found out how big this bear was, and I'd seen bear in other camps that probably weighed 400 pounds, and this bear just to me kind of dwarfed all those other bear that I'd seen. And so we're looking at him going, oh my gosh, this thing is absolutely monstrous. There's no doubt this bear is going to square, well over 7 feet. So we look and kind of turn him over to where I can see his chest. And he was so close, actually, that the fire coming out of the front end of that 50 caliber muzzleloader actually singed hair on it. And he was that close. And thankfully, shooting that Hornady bullet, I knew that it was not only accurate, but I found out it was also, thankfully, extremely dependable and deadly in this instance, as they like to say. And we looked at the bear and thought, oh my gosh. So we went and got a what they used to call four-wheelers, and had a way we struggled and finally got this bear kind of halfway up and tie him and pull more and tie him and pull more and got him loaded up and got him back to the vehicle where we had started with it from, and ended up putting him on some scales there on the reservation. And according to the scales there, that bear weighed 563 pounds. He was an absolute monster bear. Had over a 21-inch skull, we found out later. And that bear squared about 7'9", and that was without any kind of stretch. I mean, just an absolute monster bear that by far the biggest skull bear that I've ever taken. To this date, being here in 2020, and I hadn't quite quit bear hunting yet, but not hunting quite as seriously as what I used to, but by far the biggest bodied weight that I'd ever seen on a bear. You know, those bear you hear about a lot of 300-pound wild hogs, and you hear a lot about 500-pound black bear, and I learned a long time ago with black bear there, because they look so much bigger than what they might weigh. You know, you can shoot a 225, 250-pound bear, and he'll look like 400 pounds if you're not familiar with him. But same thing with wild hogs. I've weighed a lot of those 300-pound wild hogs that ended up hitting the scale between 185 and 187. But this particular bear actually was, I mean, even if those scales are off 10%, you know, we're still a 500-pound bear, and looking at the size that he had of that, and then looking at his hide and his skull, and there's no doubt this bear was that big. So kind of an interesting bear story dealing with muzzleloaders. And I got to tell you about another one that happened several years after that. I was up in Maine. I did some PR work for Thompson Center Arms before I got involved with Ruger years ago. And J. Wayne Fears and his wife at the time, and Ken French and Miss Pam and I were hunting black bear up in Maine, close to the KI, what they call the Katahdin Iron Works up there. They call it the area of the KI. It's a huge chunk of country. It's where I shot my first moose as well, too. But we're up in that area and hunting with a outfitter. TC had just introduced stainless steel flintlock. Looked traditional, except it was stainless steel. I said, yeah, I've never shot anything with a flintlock. I've shot a lot of things with percussion looking modern rifle or traditional rifles and muzzleloaders rather. And then later the inlines with the TC, and then a lot with the MK85 that Tony Knight came up with. But I'd never shot one with a flintlock, so I went through the deal of learning how to use them, which powders that you use. Use a finer powder up in the pan where the hammer hit the frizzin, which set off the spark, which ignited the powder in the barrel and sent the bullet forth. And so I played around with it there in Ken's camp and got to where I'm feeling pretty comfortable about shooting it. And they said, Larry, we got a spot we're going to put you in this afternoon. And I said, it's a baited area, of course. And this little old knoll that you're sitting on, you look down in this creek bottom, and the bear, it's just a bucket, you know, 5-gallon bucket, you know, but we fill it up every day. And there's been a pretty good bear in there. And we know there's probably some big bear in there because we've had some of the guys that are hunted that area for other things, for deer and particularly for partridge or rough grouse and kind of looking for moose, and tell us they've been seeing a big bear in there. So we're going to put you in there and stay there. And usually anywhere I hunted bear, it is always carried a second firearm just in case, because you never know what's going to happen. So, if I take one of the Encores or Contender handguns, which I did a lot of hunting with during those days, and I said, bear comes in, I know what I'm going to do. I'm put that muzzleloader down, and we'll grab that handgun and try to shoot that bear with a handgun. And so I thought, you know, I'll just take the muzzleloader, the flintlock. Excuse me. So I loaded it all up, and they dropped me off. I walked in there and sat down, and I'd been there 15, 20 minutes. And off in the not too far distance, I can hear trees being, old stumps being pushed over. I can hear limbs breaking. I'm going, oh my God, they're messing with me. I'm Ken French, thank bless his heart, he's since passed away, but Ken could be a practical joker at times. And I said, he's out there, you know, beating on things, making it sound like there's almost like a Bigfoot or something in this area. So I'm sitting there, and again, got flintlock propped up on shooting sticks and kind of looking down to where these little areas are. And it just, the sound keeps coming closer. I mean, you can hear it sound like somebody taking, just breaking dead limbs and everything. I thought, you know, it can be a bear, because usually bear try to slip in as quietly as they can. And I have no idea. Well, and I knew there were a lot of moose in that area too. And I thought, well, maybe it's just maybe it's a blind moose and he's running into things. Sitting there, and just kind of listening and wondering what the devil is going on. And about that time, I see a patch of black coming in, and it looked like a pretty good size something black. Finally, this thing steps into the opening just down there, not but about 15 yards down to where this bucket is, where it's hanging. And I look and I go, oh my God, it's a bear! It's a big bear. So I very slowly, as cautiously and quietly as possible, cocked that hammer on that flintlock, and now the bear stepped out, and he stepped up to this bucket, and this is the biggest bear I've ever seen in my life. I'd already taken that bear that weighed 563 pounds. It made that bear look small. Now, I knew that in visiting with some of the old-time bear hunters up there, that occasionally they killed a bear that would square right at 8 feet. And they'd shot some that weighed well over 500 pounds and approaching that 600 and even a little bit over 600. You know, those were kind of legendary bears up there but they did exist. And in looking at that bear, there was no question that bear weighed at least that much. This bear to me was, again, looked like he was a foot long. I'd seen brown bear by then, and he looked like a good sized brown bear, made of like a huge, huge grizzly kind of thing. Just jet black, big, big head on him, and his old belly hung down, but even with it hanging down, it was, you know, it didn't hang down that far. But I made kind of a mental mark as to how tall he was at the shoulders right next to that bait bucket. And I thought, okay, there's a spot. So I had a pretty good idea. So many things were going through my mind. And I thought, yeah, you know, okay, the bear at this point had not even really paid a whole lot of attention to me. The wind was in my favor. And so I had what I thought was plenty of time. And had the hammer cocked, and I was looking down the sights, and I said, you know, I said, if I shoot this bear a little bit lower to where I try to take out maybe the top part of his heart, and it was down below me a little way at an angle, I said, it'll leave a really good blood trail as compared to if I shoot a little bit higher, most of the blood will accumulate inside, and he may not leave a good blood trail. So I've got the exact spot picked out, and I'm excited, but not to the point to where I'm shaking or anything. I take a real fine bead and I pull the trigger. And about that time, the hammer hits the frizzin' and it goes, total silence. Total silence. The gun's not going off. I've got it pointed at them, still got it pointed at the bear. There's a little cloud of smoke here around my face. I'm thinking it's going to go off, it's going to go off, it's going to go off. It doesn't. And about that time, of course, the bear has heard all this. This bear looks up at me, and he kind of looks up there, and he kind of narrows his eyes and kind of pops his teeth a few times. And he lays his ears back, and I go, oh, my gosh, now I wonder what's going to happen kind of thing. And but in the meantime, too, I'm madly trying to reprime that pan, and he gives me just about enough time to where I can to where I get this pen reprimed, and about that time the bear walks away, and I'm going, oh my gosh, that was the biggest bear I've ever seen in my life. And bear starts walking around just beyond the slide of where I can see, and he is breaking things. He is, now I can understand him being mad, you know, something has invaded his territory, and he's wanting to get out of there. And any moment I expected the bear to come charging in. Unfortunately, he didn't. We hunted that bear, or the outfitter's wife hunted that bear for the next 2 weeks, and never ever saw this bear again. But, you know, left the track, and this track where I measured the track, his front foot across the span of that front foot from left to right, if you will, was a little over 7 inches. Now, a lot of times the way you judge the size of a bear is looking at his tracks. And if it's a 5-inch track, which is a pretty good size bear track, you can almost bet that the bear is going to square 7 feet or 6 feet. You just take the width and add one, and that'll give you an idea. Now, if you don't know how to square a bear, it means you take a measurement after the skin comes off from the tip of the nose to the tip of the tail, and without any stretch, just laying out on the ground, and then the same thing from the left foot to the tip of the claws to the right. It's on the left side to the same thing on the right side. Add those two together and divide by two, and they'll give you what they call the square of a bear. Well, again, this bear, like I said, a 5-inch bear track span on the front track is a good sized bear. A 6-inch is a monster. When you get beyond that, it's an unbelievable bear. Well, this bear literally had the span on a fairly, just not hard ground, but not soft ground either, had a measurement that was about 7 inches and a little bit. So in theory, this bear could have been an 8-foot squared bear. Now, I walked up to where this bear was standing right next to this tree where the bait bucket was tied to, and I kind of walked up beside of it and took a measurement, and it came up above my belt line. So I kind of made a mark, and this bear was an absolute monster bear, by far the biggest black bear I've ever seen. And here I had been with this, had my contender Encore or a traditional rifle, which I could have had, just one of the Encore rifles in a center fire. I mean, this bear had been mine as it was. So anyway, I didn't get him because the gun didn't go off, which I learned a great appreciation for those folks who shot flintlocks. So that night, went back, told Ken about it. We about every fourth shot in this particular gun, there was a problem with it. So we thought we'd corrected it and, you know, made sure that the hole going into the, from the flash pan into the barrel, the breech part of the barrel, if you will, was wide open and all that. So anyway, it came down to the last afternoon, and they dropped me off at a bait, and it was about a 2-mile walk into this bait, and the bait spot was where you sat on the ground between two stobs to where you had one to lean against and one kind of sit in front of you a little bit, just right there in front of you, and use it as a rest, if you will. The bait bucket was probably about 35 or so yards away in that real thick brush, and I'm sitting there and, you know, hoping for a bear to show up. And again, I'm sitting there with this flintlock, and it didn't have long to wait. Here come a sow with two cubs, and she goes over the bucket, and that one little cub stays right there with her, and this other cub immediately comes right up to me. And I'm sitting there, I've got my butt right flat on the ground, and got my feet outstretched so that they're just past this stob. It's kind of there in front of me. And this little black bear cub comes running up here and starts smelling to my feet. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this is not good. So I'm trying to push him away a little bit, you know, just kind of motion him away with my hands. Well, he didn't pay attention to hands. He's totally enamored with my foot. He is smelling around on it. And this little cub probably weighed about, 10, 15 pounds maybe at the most. And he is so enthralled with my foot, and he walks over to the other one, and I'm trying to keep an eye on him to some extent, but I'm trying to watch Mama because now she's all of a sudden realizing there is something not quite right. You know, where's this other cub? She's looking around, and I thought, oh, my gosh. And so she is making all kinds of noise trying to entice this cub to come back to where she is. And I'm going, this could get pretty serious here in just a little bit. If that she decides to come over there, I said, what am I going to do? I said, I can't kill a sow with cubs. And I said, but also, you know, I can't just let her eat me either. But, you know, so I pick out a spot. And I said, if she comes within this distance, that distance being about, 10, 12 feet out in front of me. And I said, if she comes to that distance and stops, it's okay. If she comes closer than that, I am going to have to shoot. Whether I want to or not, it's just a matter of self-preservation. So she gets more upset. And she's walking back and forth out here in front of that bait. And she is popping her teeth. And she's woofing. And she's making all kinds of noise. And this little cub is paying no attention to her at all. And I'm going, oh, God, please. Now I'm kind of kicking at the bear and at the cub. And as I do, you know, it's over here trying to bite my foot, thinking I'm playing with it kind of thing. And, oh, my gracious. So all of a sudden, here she comes, and she comes charging, and she charges, and she stops at about 20 steps out. You know, and nothing happens. The little cub doesn't run to her, but she stops, and I've got the hammer cocked, and I'm looking at her, and I'm looking at her right down the barrel. You know, if I'd had a second shot, I'd have shot into the ground, but with that flintlock, it takes a while to reload a flintlock. So she turns around and walks back and goes back. And about a minute or so later, here she comes again. This time she comes in. She's got her ears laid back, and she is woofing as she's coming in. And she jumps, gets up there within about 15, 16 feet. And now she's bouncing on her front feet, kind of, you know, standing on her hind leg, going up and down and popping. Of course, this little cub still is not paying any bit of attention, and I'm watching her down the sights of my rifle and not shooting and hoping and praying this little cub will turn around and go away and follow his mama. And she walks back a little bit, and just as soon as she does, here she comes back. And this time she comes to right on the edge of where I know I've got to shoot her. And if you've never seen a black bear charge, you cannot imagine how quick and how fast they come. This time she stops right at that 10-foot distance from the end of my foot. And I'm going, oh, God. And again, she is bouncing up and down. She's making all kinds of noise. She's ears are laid back. She's popping her teeth, her jaws, if you will. And I'm going, this cannot be good. I'm not sure what's going to happen next, but I don't want to shoot this bear. And finally, I guess the little cub gets a message, and the kind of cub just kind of waddles back over to where his mama is. And she looks at this little cub and with the expression on her face, just like you would expect your own mother if you'd done something wrong and you knew it. She scolds this little cub, and she rears back, and she pops him with her foot, and she sails this little cub in the air almost back to the bait bucket, and then she turns around and walks away. And I'm going, oh, my God, thank you, Lord, for not letting that bear come any closer. And I'm sitting there reflecting upon it, you know, and I kind of let the hammer back down on that muzzleloader, on that flintlock, and I spend the rest of the afternoon sitting there, and it's absolutely a glorious afternoon, but, you know, no more bear come in, and it's just about dark, and I'm going, you know, I've got a 2-mile walk. I might as well start walking back, because I might have to walk all the way back to where they picked me up, and it's an old logging road. And so I start walking back to where the pickup spot is, and I get probably about, maybe a quarter mile from where the spot is they're supposed to pick me up. I said, I'm going to have to unload this gun. I said, I might as well just go ahead, shoot it out. You know, they're not going to be, if I shoot now, I'm not concerned about anything between here and the rest of the walk. And so I point the muzzleloader at the ground, this old flintlock. I cock that hammer, pull the trigger. The hammer hits the frizzin'. He goes, shh. Dead silence. And I'm going, oh my God. And then I start thinking about, you know, what would I have done if this bear had come, if it come all the way in after that, the hammer hit the frizzin' and then the flash was in the pan. You know, was it just going to be a flash in the pan or was there going to be another shot? And I thought, well, I guess I could have tried to shove it down her throat or something like that, because about all that I could have done. But, you know, that night I had a discussion with the, had a discussion with Ken and Wayne Fears, and we talked about years when the old time mountain men had flintlocks and how dependable or undependable those guns must have been, and how glad they must have been when they finally developed a cap lock system that pretty much went off all the time. And of course, these days we use shotgun primers and all those other kind of things in the inlines. And every time you pull the trigger, there is going to be smoke. But I'll have to tell you, after those two adventures with a flintlock, I gained a tremendous amount of respect for those people that actually did many years ago have to deal with flintlock, because that was the greatest innovation they had at the time. But I'll also tell you that was also the last time I ever decided that I was going to try to shoot a flintlock at anything. So these days I'm so very thankful in the fact that, you know, I've got Ruger rifles that they're the best in the world, and I've got Trijicon scopes that are just don't come any better. Of course, still shooting the same Hornady ammo, the Hornady bullets, although now don't shoot them in a muzzleloader anymore. Shoot them in a pistol every once in a while. It's basically the same bullets that I used back then. But bear hunting has been so much fun, and I've been able to take some really big bear. I'll tell you a story sometime about some of the bears that we've dealt with up in Alaska, being charged up there by both grizzlies and black bear. But you know, there's nothing wrong with dreaming. And right now, I know a lot of the seasons are closed. Dallas Safari Club, the DSC, if you will, and DSC Foundation are working very closely with so many of the outfitter organizations, both here in North America and also abroad. They do so much to help. And if you get a chance, you know, there are several really good websites. One of the things, of course, we have our trailingthehuntersmoon.com website that can put you in touch with where our shows are aired on YouTube and all these other kind of things, but also put you right directly in touch with the DSC website. And I've been doing a blog there for a little bit now as well, too, that appears periodically about dealing with what's going on right now and some of the things that you can do. But Dallas Safari Club is just such an absolutely fantastic organization. Of course, they're supported in great many ways by Hornady and Ruger and Trijicon and several of the other companies that we deal with. It's just one of those organizations that if you're not a member, you really need to be. And you can go to biggame.org. That's biggame.org. And see all the benefits, see all the things going on there. And you can go to the DSCF.com as well, too, which is the Dallas Safari Club Foundation that really is doing so much right now. Both those organizations are greatly supporting what's going on and going to make sure that once some of these seasons that were closed this year come next year, under totally different circumstances dealing with health situations such as we're faced with right now, but are going to make sure that these seasons do again occur next year and trying to find different ways to help support those outfitters. Now, I will tell you that if you do have a booked a hunt with an outfitter and you can't feel like you can't go this year, be a little understanding. And those guys, you know, it may be a little bit of your money, but those guys depend upon that's their entire salary for the year is the hunts that they do. So be a little understanding, and rather than cancel the hunt, just kind of postpone it for a year or you know, it's going to be so much better next year when you get right down to it. Think about the bear. They're all going to be a year older, probably a year bigger as well, too. And so if you got to hunt, if you're looking at going abroad, you know, consider doing so next year and just kind of wait there and kind of hope and dream a little bit and kind of sit around the fire, maybe in even the virtual or proverbial fire that, you know, you kind of create in your own office in your own mind and or your own home and tell some stories as we just did about some of the hunts that you've been on. And gotta tell you that I love this bear hunting, but you know, I've called bear as well too in the past with my good friend Gary Robertson's Burn Brothers Game Calls, and of course these days with the Texas Race Hunting Products, we've got scent control so that you don't have to really pay a whole lot of attention to the wind anymore. But all those kind of good things are going on, and those folks are out there. All of our sponsors are out there right now, and they're in the same situation as many of us are. But you know, it's going to get better, and it's going to get a whole lot better this coming year. You know, if you got a time too, and if you're looking for a hunt in the future, let me always suggest, particularly if you're looking here in Texas, to get in touch with Wildlife Systems with Greg Simons. And again, a great supporter of Dallas Safari Club and the Texas Wildlife Association as well. And again, all these organizations like DSC, TWA, and even some others, they're out there doing an absolutely great job. And show them your support. Right now, too, NRA always has been there for us. Now's a good time for us to try to support NRA when they're having some situations going on, and we know we're going to be faced with more of those kind of things. So, you know, have a good time out there. Enjoy this time what you can with your family. Spend some time on the DSC, or rather the biggame.org, and visit us over at trailinthehuntersmoon.com, and you know, if you want to watch some TV shows, they're there. And you know, just enjoy your time with your family. These are special times in a bad way, but they're special times in a very, very good way. Look forward to catching up with you next week right here, and maybe we'll tell a little bit more hunting stories, and really want to try to get into some of the guns next time, maybe talking about some of the guns that I've used when it comes to black bear hunting, and maybe a few hunting stories too as well. So look forward to catching up with you here next week.
DSC's Untamed Heritage is brought to you by Dallas Safari Club, conservation, education, protecting hunters' rights, Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms, Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable, Krijikon, brilliant aiming solutions, Burnham Brothers Game Calls, Colonist Calls Made, Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today, Texas Raised Hunting Products, The Scent Gods, www.trailingthehuntersmoon.com, The Hunter Conservation's website,